All the teams are fake. Equipment is a waste. So throw it all out the door, 'cause it'll matter no more. But all my talk is real. My name's Riotis, here's the deal. Listen to the Fake Sports Real Talk Podcast, it's a thrill.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the Fake Sports Real Talk Podcast. My name's Riotis, and today is Wednesday, August 27th, right before Labor Day, getting pretty excited. And joining with me on today's podcast is a cavalcade of stars, three former guests that you've all heard once before, making a return in what might be a complete blow-up if things go wrong, or it could be a tremendous success, and we might do it a few more times throughout the season. Joining me in several different states, actually. Not a single one of us is in the same state today. We got up in Kansas City, we got Gabe Spurgeon. Out west in Denver, Colorado is Evan Besperot. And down south in Oklahoma City is Sean Wright. Guys, how are you all doing?
Fantastic.
And therein lies the problem with doing this. I think everybody sets up at the exact same time. So I guess that was my fault for setting you up that way. So let's just kind of go around the room, kind of get just some initial thoughts before we dive into the little outline that I sent out. Start with you, Gabe. Kind of what was your overall impression of the draft on Saturday?
Well, our keeper system changed the game for me this year entirely. You know, since I had two keeps that didn't cost me an early pick, I felt like my team was getting pretty darn full by about the fifth round. I felt like I was full up on key position players, so it was very interesting for me this year.
That sounds like a humble brag to me. Well, we'll get back into that here in just a second. Sean, what about you? What was your overall impressions of the draft?
My impression basically for me was overcompensation. Definitely was looking to increase my wide receivers, and I definitely did that. Unbeknownst to me, I have eight sitting there now. Hopefully one of those pans out. I have constantly struggled with wide receivers, and I doubt these eight are going to be the answer, but we'll see.
How did I miss that? I did not even notice you drafted eight. That's awesome.
Neither did I. I don't know who I'm more upset with.
What about you, Evan? Any overall thoughts about the draft on Saturday?
Yeah, I kind of echo Gabe's comment in that I think the new keeper system that we implemented, you know, at any point when you just kind of throw it in there like we did this year, it'll benefit some teams more than others. And I think that was something that benefited Gabe greatly due to his, you know, kind of his good pickups last year off the waiver wire. And other teams didn't have those waiver wire pickups. They didn't benefit quite as much. So I think that did change the draft for several teams quite a bit.
Yeah, very true. And so kind of as you all alluded to, we're gonna talk to all three of you, and then you guys are going to have a chance to question me. So we're going to talk about all four of our teams, but more importantly for those of you who are listening but are not in our league, which is the majority of people, I guess, we're going to talk about the players themselves. We're going to talk about why we picked them where we did, or maybe why we passed on a certain player. And we're just going to kind of go through and kind of give our overall impressions of how we think their performances are going to be. So if you guys are ready, we'll just hop right into it. And Gabe, let's start with you. Of course, we've already mentioned the fact that you had two keepers, Keenan Allen and Zach Stacy, which cost you a 13th and a 14th round pick. So that's definitely a great way to start off. You drafted Eddie Lacy at pick number 3 overall, because that was your draft position. Certainly what I expected there. And then something that I certainly didn't expect, and I know you didn't expect, was A.J. Green falling to you at the number 18th pick in the second round. And when you and I talked a few weeks ago, you said he was your number 2 wide receiver on your personal board. So how ecstatic were you to have him fall to you?
I was really glad when he did fall to me. To be honest with you, it didn't quite click until about the pick before that, oh my God, A.J. Green's still there. I was just happened to look, and I'd be like, I don't remember a wide receiver really going yet. And so get one of those top 5 to 7 wide receivers, you really struggle with your wide receiver position all year. And so I'm glad that that's not going to be me this year if everybody stays healthy.
Yeah, pairing up A.J. Green with Keenan Allen certainly gives you one of the more dynamic wide receiving duos in the league. Great pick there. You've got Arian Foster in the third round, who I really like, I think. Certainly nothing wrong with taking him. And then now I want to talk about your number four pick, which was pick number 38 overall. And you took Matthew Stafford. And what I want to talk about here is you and I had discussed there is certainly that tier one of quarterbacks. I said they'd all go in the top 20. They did. The Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers. And then there was that lull, that wait until another quarterback was taken. And it was 21 picks later, and it was you taking Matthew Stafford. And so what I want to ask you is, what was it about him, or not necessarily Stafford in general, because I know you liked him, but what made you break up that lull and be the first to take somebody from that second tier of quarterbacks?
Yeah, well, the thing you got to look at for me is that was actually my 6th pick. So sure. I had 3 running backs and 2 wide receivers already. So what I was looking at were, I was basically looking at the running backs that were there. I just wasn't that high on anybody that was left. And so then I look at wide receivers, and I was like, yeah, there's still some good ones out there. Looking at our draft order, there would have been Roddy White, Andre Johnson, Wes Welker, Percy Harvin, those guys were out there. And I got to thinking, you know, when I look at the value that I can add to my team, if I can make sure and get the guy that's going to have 35 pass attempts minimum every week, I'm good with Matt Stafford in the 4th round, especially since he's the 6th player on my team. So I think being the 6th player on my team is probably the biggest factor that he went in the 4th round for me.
Okay, yeah, that's well said. So you're saying if you didn't have those 2 keepers in those late rounds, it's very possible you would not have taken him there then.
Yeah, I probably would have pushed for another running back, maybe wide receiver, but probably would have pushed for another running back. Looking at who went afterwards, Shane Vereen, I'm not too big on him. Maybe Chris Johnson. I might have reached for Chris Johnson, but that would be it. I already had those positions filled. It was time for a quarterback for me.
Very, very. You know, that's something I never really thought about when we put this keeper system into place, was how it was going to affect other positions in the draft. So I like that. So let's move on a little further in your draft. I got one more question for you. You took your first tight end with your next pick, Vernon Davis. Then you took your first bench player in Golden Tate. And then your second and third, which I guess Tate could be a flex too, excuse me, but your second and third bench players was actually Jason Witten and Colin Kaepernick. And I found that interesting because a lot of people with their bench players, they'll load up on those wide receivers and running backs, but you decided to go a different direction. What made you have a tight end and a quarterback as some of your first bench players?
I felt like I was really locked in with the 3 running backs and 2 wide receivers I already had. I was really big on them. A good argument could be made. Maybe I needed to at least throw in one more wide receiver there. But, you know, I was excited to have Vernon Davis and Matthew Stafford on my team. But I've been bit by the injury bug before whenever you've only got one position to fill at quarterback. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to carry a good player the whole season on your bench. But, you know, I've been bit by that before. I've had Tom Brady go down in the first quarter of the first game of the season when he was my number one overall pick. Last year I had Aaron Rodgers go down mid-season. He was, if I remember right, my number one pick. So I was pretty happy to have that backup. Another thing, honestly, that played in, I didn't want anybody else to have Colin Kaepernick. When I saw that he was still on the board, I went ahead and put him in my queue in case he was still there when the pick came up. And I didn't really want to face him because he can be explosive. So I'm glad to not have him on someone else's team, that's for sure.
Well, Gabe, overall, I've already told you I really liked your team, and so I actually struggled finding things to question you about. So I'm kind of nitpicking here. I thought overall you did a great job, and like everybody said, those two keepers you had really helped you out. Now I'm going to give Evan and Sean a chance if they wrote any notes down for them to ask you a question. Evan and Sean, do you have anything?
Yeah, Gabe, my question right before they actually answered it was if you drafted Colin Kaepernick specifically because you wanted to rotate because you had some hesitancy about Stafford or maybe play the matchups, or if it was just because he was the best player available that you saw on the board. You kind of already addressed that, but I guess my first question still stands up. Did you have any hesitancy about Stafford? Did that play into your drafting of Kaepernick at all?
Yeah, a small amount. I mean, Stafford's got an injury history. He was healthy all last year, but I could be wrong, but I think that's his only full season he's played in his NFL career. Yeah. So, you know, the injury bug could very well bite him, and like I said, that was, it almost wouldn't matter who I had at quarterback just because I've been bit twice by the quarterback injury pretty bad. So, I haven't decided exactly my strategy yet. I'm sure I will be looking at matchups every week. I think Stafford, at least starting out, will be my starting quarterback. But like I said, Colin Kaepernick has potential to be explosive, despite the run-first offense that he's in. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, there may be a week where I switch it up because of matchups.
Another thing about Kaepernick is he's got that tough division to play in, but he'll be playing very solid defenses six games a year with those other three teams in the division, so that's something else to kind of consider.
Yeah, very true.
Sean, anything to add? Are you good?
Besides just jealousy as I'm looking at his roster. Right. My question, I'm depressed too, with I know you kind of touched on it in some earlier podcasts, but having Emmanuel Sanders where you landed him at, I know you still got, you know, some really good wide receivers ahead of him, but what do you think his contribution this year for you is going to be? If he slightly produces under Decker or around that area, I mean, what's kind of your expectations and you have projection for him?
Yeah, you know, I look at my wide receivers I got on the bench. I got Golden Tate, Emmanuel Sanders, and both of those guys have really good potential. In my starting lineup, I've got A.J. Green and Keenan Allen. So both of those guys are definitely ahead of Golden Tate and Emmanuel Sanders, game one. But like you said, Emmanuel Sanders has a whole lot of potential. So, you know, there could be a matchup thing. There could be an injury. Or it could be a trade chip. I hear that some people are very concerned about wide receivers. So,
thank you. I'm glad you picked up on this.
So he could be a trade chip down the road if everybody's staying healthy.
Well, yeah, I will say good deal. It is, as I stare at it, is very impressive.
I will say the one mistake I made in the draft that I'm surprised I didn't catch any crap for. It was a late round. I don't remember exactly how late, but I drafted D'Angelo Williams. And at the end of one of our podcasts, right, I said, don't pick up a known loser. And I picked up a known loser. He's not going to be good for any more than 6 or 7 points a week. He's just useless. Yeah. You know, he's going to ride the bench, and then I'll drop him.
Well, you're nitpicking at that point, and he is a former GLFFL MVP. He carried Evan to a championship 1 year, so.
I have very fond memories of D'Angelo Williams. 4 touchdowns in week 16.
Okay, we can stop talking about that now. Because I was the team you beat in that stupid week 16, so. Well, good job, Gabe. That was, like everybody said, I think everybody's pretty jealous of your roster. It came together really well, and I think you're definitely in good shape. Let's transition out to Sean's team. And, Sean, you didn't keep any players this year, so you started with a clean roster. Your first pick was, well, you had the number 5 draft slot, and your first pick was Jimmy Graham. And for those of you who don't know, that might sound pretty high, but when you consider that a lot of those top players were keepers, I had no issue taking Jimmy Graham at number 5 because he was really like the 9th or 10th player taken when you factor in keepers. But the first question I'm going to ask you, and it's funny, you and I talked about running backs on our podcast we did a couple weeks ago, and this guy's name never got mentioned, and I wish he would have, because I think we would have had a pretty good debate. You took Doug Martin at 16 overall, and I'll just be honest, I do not like Doug Martin this year. He was number 21 on my personal draft board among running backs. And so here's just your chance to kind of defend yourself and let me know why you drafted him where you did in that second round.
Well, one, I speak as honest as I can on these podcasts.
Okay.
Two, I'm not going to give away all my secrets.
Okay. Fair
Three,
enough.
I'm really 100% not sure. Well, what happened, as you were kind of saying, especially with that new keeper system we were kind of going through, and I was kind of looking, you know, first pick, because I mentioned, you were actually, the question was, you know, last time we talked was about Jimmy Graham and if I would take him in the first round.
Right.
And I said there were too many running backs and things like that that I really probably wanted. And then when it came time for my draft, after looking at our keeper system, he was probably my best option in terms of, you know, being able to put up consistent points.
Yeah, I had no issue with Jimmy Graham at number 5.
And so that happened. Okay, great. And then we go through another round, and then I start looking at the running backs. And it was one of those things where I wasn't really high on a lot of them that were still available. And it kind of came down, and I don't know if you remember, it was not a very quick pick for me. It came down to the fact of how many times he's actually going to be touching the ball.
Yeah.
Which will be tons. And I'm really hoping that he just can stay healthy, and the fact that he will have the ball in his hands a lot, hopefully that means points in the end zone. That's kind of where I was looking at that with, you know, being caught in that situation. It was, like you said, it was nothing we brought up, you know, last time we discussed, and just, you know, as I found myself in that situation, I was, you know, kind of scrambling, looking, and it really came down to who I was going to be thinking was going to be getting the touches.
Yeah, and you know, I will say this about Doug Martin. You know, last year, he was a top five pick in fantasy drafts. I mean, he's really slipped down, including my own personal rankings. I think, you know, just maybe it might be one of those things where you chalk it up to a lost season. And so you may be coming out looking like the smartest man in the room at the end of the year. But I was curious kind of what your thought process was there, because, like I said, he wasn't even on my radar. So,
yeah, it was. Well, and I remember Hillman, I think, was available. I guess I'm being lazy not looking at that, but I'm pretty sure he was there. And I just, as I discussed before, I think of that name, and I just see fumbles. No, both of them. True. They just constantly rotate. Who's fumbling and then who's starting? I just, it drives me insane. You know, Sean, I actually don't have that big a heartburn with Doug Martin at 16. I'm not sure that I would have taken him, but like that reaction was not, wow, Sean screwed up, because I feel like Tampa Bay's in a lot better situation this year than they were last year. Last year, the defense only had to stop one person, basically, and that was Doug Martin. I'm not sure the line was that great last year either. So they've got some better weapons this year. So Doug Martin is going to be better this year than last year, no doubt.
They did get Logan Mankins in a trade from the Patriots, so that might help shore up their offensive line too. So, you went in the third round, Sean, with Frank Gore. I did not have a problem with that pick. Some people might have thought it was a little high, but you and I talked about how I thought he was way underrated by Yahoo. So I think that's a safe pick, a great running back, an RB2. Then you went Larry Fitzgerald and Percy Harvin in rounds 4 and 5, two of those 8 wide receivers that you wound up with. and then the next guy I kind of want to dive in with you and talk about, and this is kind of going back to a podcast I had with Gabe earlier this year. You drafted Nick Foles to be your starting quarterback, and I'm completely fine with that. I had Nick Foles as my number 9 overall quarterback, so a starting quarterback in a 10-team league. But Gabe told me he did not belong in the top 10. So why are you and me right, and why is he wrong?
Numbers. Those are loaded. No, as I mentioned before, Nick Foles is a very intelligent quarterback, and another year in that system of learning that system, Tipco is going to be able to put more of his playbook into, you know, into the play, but into the game plan. And, you know, who's delivering the ball to LeSean McCoy? Half the time, well, I don't know half the time, but most of the time, it's into the flats, you know, going out of the backfield, doing all that. And so any time, I don't know, I just picture the Eagles offense, it's going to be starting with Foles, and I expect points to be coming out of that, especially on a consistent basis. I know that they're going to be throwing, and he's going to be in the situation to put up points for me. And so that's why at the point where I looked at him to be my quarterback and would be perfect, and it actually worked out well, too, is I was able to kind of back him up with Phillip Rivers, who may not always, you know, put up really attractive fantasy points, but he's also really good, you know, for those bye weeks. He's good for about 2 or 3 weeks, Phillip Rivers, to put up excellent numbers. So my quarterback position, I'm very proud with how that turned out.
Yeah, to somebody who has two Eagles receivers on their roster, that's me. I have both Jeremy Maclin and Zach Ertz. You know, I'm expecting big things from Foles this year, too, like I said. So that team's just going to be a blast to watch this year. I almost want to get that Sunday NFL ticket just so I can watch the Eagles games.
Yeah, one thing that I kind of thought about Foles is, you know, I think I didn't have him in my top 10. I don't think I'd be too comfortable with him as my starting quarterback. And, you know, maybe somebody I would have drafted high number two and then, you know, stuck him in throughout the season. But one thing I think people are doing too much is looking at last year's stats and saying, well, that's completely you can't repeat that, which is probably true if you look at the 27-2 ratio. But he doesn't have to meet that 27-2 ratio to be a top 10 quarterback. You know, he throws 20 intercepts or 20 touchdowns and 6 interceptions over the course of the first 10 or 12 games or however many he started last year. That's still pretty decent numbers, so like, regression is expected, but that's not necessarily mean he's going to have a bad season either.
That's a good point, Evan. And so the third player I want to talk to you about, Sean, and before I bring up his name, let's just get it out of the way. Our league name is the Gorilla Legends. We all went to Pittsburgh State University. We all knew that third-round pick John Brown from Pittsburgh State University was going to get drafted on Saturday. There was no doubt in my mind somebody was going to get him. But what I didn't see coming was him being a top 100 pick. And I'm not saying that was good or bad, Sean. I just want to kind of get your thoughts on him. I'm sure there's a little bit of sentiment there, but I also know that you got to be a believer. So tell me what you expect from John Brown in 2014.
A lot of these guys, you know, these D2 guys, it's the situation that they're put in. A lot of guys need to be in the correct system to flourish, to, you know, meet, you know, their full potential. I think he's in probably one of the top situations he could be in. With Malcolm Floyd and a healthy Larry Fitzgerald, and from what I'm seeing, he is moved up into be their number three receiver. And I think with those two threats on the outside, they're going to have to focus, you know, defenses are going to have to focus on Floyd and Fitzgerald. And I think it is a stretch, but I'm really not super against it. I don't think that waste of a pick because, you know, lining him up in the slot and also him being a deep threat, I think is really attractive. And he had an incredible catch his last preseason game.
He did.
For a touchdown. And that was actually one of the only highlights the Cardinals offense had that game. I wanted to make sure that I was the first person to pick him, and I wanted to give him the honor of being in the top 100, and our league allows 6 bench players, so, you know, instead of, you know, D'Angelo Williams, why not give it to John Brown?
There you go. I will say this, Sean, when you drafted John Brown, I looked at the Yahoo projections, and they were giving him like 2 points a game, and so whatever. Then he had that really nice game on Sunday with that amazing catch you were talking about. Now they have him projected at like 4.5 points a game. So
slowly working his way up. He's going to start getting on that every week. It's just going to double.
There you go.
Dozen by year end.
There you go. So I think.
All joking aside, I think he really is in a, such a good situation for him. And even if he wasn't on my fantasy team, as you know, a bunch of Pitt State and especially D2 homers, you know, kind of like that kid out of Abilene Christian, Johnny Knox.
Yeah.
That was Chicago. I love seeing those guys do well. I have no reason to root for Chicago or any of that, but you see those D2 guys get in there, and you really want them to excel. And even especially like a Danny Woodhead, who I have on my team, so I guess I like the old D2 team. I love seeing those guys succeed. And so even if he wasn't on my team, I would definitely be rooting for him.
Absolutely, I think we all share those thoughts. Gabe and Evan, I know you kind of chimed in here, but are there any other players that we haven't talked about that you want to ask Sean about?
I just want to say that if I happen to lose to Sean, even if it's in a championship game, because John Brown catches a deep bomb, I'm going to be perfectly fine with that. But I just had a question. I just kind of looked at your... I didn't realize that you had the eight wide receivers, which is impressive. But I was looking at your running back.
Well, I think apparently it's seven. I was counting some of, I think, Jimmy Graham, but...
Oh, gotcha. Because you've got, Martin and then Gore, we touched on, and then you've got Woodhead and McFadden. So I was just kind of... It looks a little light on what you have there, especially with one of those backups being McFadden and not knowing his role. So I was just curious on your comfort level with your running backs there. No, not at all. I kind of said in the beginning, I've struggled with wide receivers, and I feel like somehow it kind of got away with me on the running backs. That's never really been a concern for me. And then when I started looking, at who my starters were, I was like, oh, okay. And so I'm thinking if I can, and it's going to be very difficult, if I can pick the games that these guys, should. Because most of those guys should be good for at least two or three, not at least, maybe one or two games. If I can pick that at the correct time, I should be okay. But the odds of that happening are slim. They don't call you Old Man River for no reason, so. it'll definitely be a matchup game.
Sean, I think you got a couple of really good value picks on your wide receivers. You're bound to have one or two. You got Anquan Boldin at 13, which I don't think he's a top wide receiver, but at 13 I think he's still 13th round. And then your last pick, Marvin Jones, I actually like him as a pretty good sleeper. Were you looking at those two guys going in at all, or did they just fall and that was who you thought was best?
Yeah, it was. I did have Anquan Boldin in my queue for quite a while. And it got to the point of, like you said, that late in the rounds that I did decide to pull the trigger on him. Marvin Jones, I think, I'm really excited about, especially when somebody showed the stats of Andy Dalton and Peyton Manning next to each other in like their first three seasons. Andy Dalton is throwing the ball. And there's no arguing that, and it's got to be going to somebody. And so I'm really thinking that, there will definitely be some times, and that he can be someone that I'll watch throughout the year, obviously after the first 3 weeks. But, starting October, definitely be watching and see what he's producing. And hopefully I can get some sort of mileage out of him.
Yeah, in my podcast with Rye on wide receivers, I named Marvin Jones, as if I remember correctly, as one of the potential sleepers out there. So I agree with you. I think you got a good pick there.
Okay, and now we'll move from Sean over to Evan, who was at pick position number 9. And now, Evan, you did keep one player, and not quite the value as Gabe's, but still a great value. You were able to keep Le'Veon Bell in the 8th round, and so you went into the draft with one running back. And I'm going to preface this before I say who you picked in rounds 1 and 2. I know you were not happy with how your wide receivers turned out in this year's draft. So you come into the draft at the running back, and you follow it up at pick number 9 by getting Monte Ball, a running back, and then Drew Brees, a quarterback. Both of those positions, you had both A.J. Green and Dez Bryant available. And so I just kind of want to hear what it was that made you pass on one of those star wide receivers for somewhat of an unproven running back in Monte Ball. And actually, I don't have an issue with Drew Brees. I thought he was fine at number 12. So more Monte Ball than anything.
You know, what I was thinking is I went in there, as I really thought that DeMarco Murray would be there at number 9, and that's what I was planning on taking, because I think he'll have a great season, and I think you think that as well, right?
So, yes.
And to be honest, I was a little bit surprised that he was gone. You know, he got picked up at pick number 4,
mm-hmm.
so it threw me for a little bit of a loop, but what I wanted is I thought that the wide receiver depth was a little bit better than the running back depth this year, so I thought, you know, after Monte Ball, on my own personal rankings, I thought there was a little bit more of a steeper drop. So I wanted to try to get a running back with that spot, with that number 9 spot. And, you know, I have Le'Veon Bell, and I think he's a great value in the 8th round, but he's more in more of a timeshare than I had originally anticipated. I think that's how it'll end up. So I wanted to try to get the best running back available with that first pick. I recognize that Ball has some risk, and I could be very wrong about this, but, you know, the upside that he has, I think, you know, he's a guy who could almost replicate Sean Moreno's numbers from last year, 1,500 yards and, you know, 10, 12, 13 touchdowns. So I think the upside is there, and so long as he fills in that role and doesn't mess it up in the first week or two, I think I'll be okay with it. But I recognize that there are probably a few people kind of like, whoa, that's a little risky there, but I went for it.
Hey. You had a good reason, so I wasn't sure if it was impulse or if that was well thought out, and it does sound like it was well thought out. Like I said, you got Drew Brees at number 12. And then, you know, Evan, the bad thing about having a good season the previous year is, you know, you have pick number 9 in a 10-team league, and then you have quite the lull before you pick again. So about 17 picks, if I'm doing my math correctly, passed before you're able to pick again. You took Rashad Jennings in the 3rd round, which you and I had actually talked about him in a previous podcast. I know you like him. Thought that was a good pick. And then you had finally took a wide receiver in round 4 with Vincent Jackson, Torrey Smith in round 5, and Terrence Williams in round 6. So you tried to load up there. And I want to ask you about the last of those names, Terrence Williams, who I really like. He was high on my draft board, so I thought he was picked right where he should have been, but not really somebody we've talked a whole lot about so far this year. So kind of want to get your thoughts on what you expect from Terrence Williams and why it was that you drafted him there in the 6th round.
You know, I think he's, like as Sean had mentioned, a couple of his players, but he's just in a great position to succeed. He's the number 2, and if there's a number 2 receiver in that offense, and if you have to be a number 2 behind somebody, being behind Dez Bryant is one of the better places to be, just from the attention that he gets. You know, when defensive coordinators put these on the plan, number 1 thing is we got to figure out a way to stop Bryant and work your way down from there. I just think that leads to a lot of opportunity for Terrence Williams to have a great season, and you know, I think I've heard some positive things from the head coach, Jason Garrett, there saying that he really thinks he's going to do well and have the opportunity to succeed. And while that might just be some preseason talk that you hear a lot of, I just think he's in a good position. I think he's got a good skill set. And, you know, the guy gets open deep pretty frequently, and that's something that I'm excited to see. I think he can do really well.
I completely agree, and I'm just going to give a little preview. Next week, Sean and I are doing some bold predictions, and Terrence Williams will be involved in one of my bold predictions. So there's a little tease for everybody. So
I have a bold prediction that he will not be part of mine.
Good. We want to touch on different subjects. So let's go down the draft a little bit further. Lamar Miller, 7. Of course, Le'Veon Bell was your 8th round keeper. Then Reuben Randall. And you finally drafted a tight end there in round 10. We had one guy in our league who didn't draft a tight end until the very last round. He actually drafted a kicker before he drafted a tight end. But other than him, Evan, you were the last person to draft a tight end. And so I just kind of want to get – this is more of a strategy question than anything. Was that planned? Do you just feel like maybe all tight ends are created equal? Just kind of – if that was how it was played out or if that was anticipated.
You know, I did figure I was going to get one of the top three tight ends in Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, and Rob Gronkowski. You know, Graham was taken the first round. I wasn't going to draft him probably in the first round. Thomas was kept, and Gronkowski, I think other people were probably more high on him than I was. And to be honest, after those top three, it was about the next five or six that I think any one of those could be the fourth guy or that guy who could be the fourth best could easily be the tenth best. So really, I think there's just a lot of equality in there, a lot of unknown. So after those top three guys were gone, I really didn't have any desire to take one unless one kind of fell into my lap with what I thought was a good pick. And then through those middle rounds, nobody really stood out. And then when I got to round 10, I saw Dennis Pitta was still there. He was actually my sixth ranked tight end this year. And I think I took him, he was the ninth tight end taken. So I thought he had a pretty good deal out of that. And I just think, you know, there's a lot of talk and hype about him last year that, you know, he got hurt early in the season, wasn't much of a factor till the very end of the season. But I think there's not that hype this year that people have talked about. I think he's a little bit under the radar, so that's why I kind of targeted him.
Hey, Evan.
Yeah.
This is me applauding you. I just love your thought process about that. Not necessarily Dennis Pitta. I mean, yeah, I'm not that high on Pitta, but the fact that you saw a break in the tiers after those top three tight ends, and you told yourself it doesn't necessarily matter who I end up with. In my eyes, they're all about the same, and so you kind of put that position on the back burner. You went after those running backs and wide receivers, and that's exactly how a draft should be done. And you ended up with somebody you're very happy with. So I'm glad I asked you that,
yeah.
and very good strategy.
Hey.
Sean and Gabe, what do you have for Evan?
Yeah, Evan, I was going to ask you, you have obviously a great quarterback in Drew Brees, but you didn't draft a backup at all. And then your tight end's a little shaky, and you don't have a backup. How do you feel about your bench? I'm looking at your running backs. You got a couple of good options at running back on your bench, but overall, how do you feel about that?
About my bench in general? You know, I think I purposely didn't draft another quarterback, and then the tight ends, as I mentioned, and nobody really stood out to me, but I figure I'm only going to need a quarterback for 1 week, you know, barring injury, so hopefully, because I don't think there's a situation where I'd ever start anybody else over Drew Brees. So I just purposely didn't draft anybody there, and I'll just fill in depending on how the season goes. With the tight end, you know, I'll just kind of play that one by ear. I feel like tight end's a position where you can kind of go get a guy who can fill in, and, you know, he might only get your 4 or 5 points, but that's a, you know, sacrifice I was willing to make to load up on the other position. I think if the players I have on my bench, I think there's some potential there. You know, I've got a couple wide receivers with Reuben Randall and Marcus Wheaton. Those are number two guys on their teams, and those teams should throw the ball a fair amount, so I think I wouldn't start in week 1, 1 or 2 or 3 probably, but I think they can develop pretty well. And with my running backs, I think they have enough depth there I'm pretty comfortable with as well. Especially with Kyree Robinson. I think he's somebody who could take over Mark Ingram's role in that Saints offense and then maybe be a little bit of a spark in that running game to take the job from Ingram.
Yeah, I think depth at running back and wide receiver is kind of the name of the game here for you, and I agree with you on your quarterback position. If I had a Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, or Aaron Rodgers, I probably wouldn't have drafted another quarterback either.
Yeah, I'm kind of mine with the quarterback, but I get that. You're actually just one of two teams in our league that only has one quarterback. So that means that supposedly the top 22 quarterbacks are off the table.
Hmm.
Fun fact.
I did not know that.
But I do have a kind of question, since we kind of asked overall on the bench, my one thing was,
And I hear it thrown out a lot in terms of fantasy talk, and that is, you kind of touched on this earlier when you're talking about Le'Veon Bell, and you have Monty Ball. Did you ever consider handcuffing them?
You know, that's something I didn't focus on at all, to be honest, and it's something I probably should have done a little bit more thinking of, like grabbing LeGarrette Blount later in the round, you know, maybe instead of one of those backup wide receivers, might have been smarter. I guess I never really do that in my draft, for better or worse. I just feel like, you know, if you're playing on an injury, having somebody carried there when you could have somebody who's, you know, in a better position to produce. So, no, didn't even consider it, to be honest. Is that something you guys kind of keep in mind, or as you're going through the draft, or?
No, it wasn't until honestly, until you just mentioned Le'Veon Bell sharing carries.
Yeah.
I'm glad Sean brought that up, because I do hear a lot of things about handcuffing. I think in our league, in a league our size with only 10 teams, it's not nearly as important, because you're always going to have a few decent running backs out there on the waiver wire. But if you get into 12-team, 14, 16-team leagues, then I think it becomes really important, because if one of those running backs goes down, you're not going to have jack squat out there on the waiver wire, and I think that's when it becomes really a big deal.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, well, now I'm going to turn the tables over to you guys. We can talk a little bit about my team. If there's anything you want to ask me about, fire away.
How do you feel about Cam Newton in the preseason?
Well, I'm not going to lie, Sean. The injury scared me a little bit. And so, especially because running is such a big part of his game. And with a rib injury, it makes me think that he might try to avoid contact a little bit more. I don't like that pick as much, but I tell you, it did justify my selection of Jay Cutler just two rounds later. And so I'm really happy I got some quarterback insurance.
Yeah, it was a lot better with Jay Cutler behind him.
By the way, I love Jay Cutler this year. I know he has some injury history as well. But I think on a per game basis, he is he's really going to have a monster season.
I have a question for you. You were one of the few people in our keeper system to take advantage of a change in your mind one time for a keeper deadline. I think you initially picked up, you had chosen to keep Percy Harvin somewhere in the 13th or 14th round,
mm-hmm.
And then you switched that. You kept Demaryius Thomas and Marshawn Lynch with your first two picks.
Right.
Without giving away too much of your strategy, what was the reason for the change there?
No, I don't mind sharing that at all. Originally, I was thinking in terms of value. So I was seeing, okay, Percy Harvin's going in the fifth round. And so by keeping him in the 14th round, I'm basically gaining a 9-round advantage. I mean, that was the highest number of all my players from last year. And so that's kind of what I had settled on. Honestly, I'd been thinking about this since July. I know that doesn't surprise any of you guys. So that's kind of what I settled on, like I said. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, what's Percy Harvin? I mean, is he certainly not a number one wide receiver. Is he a number two wide receiver? Is he a flex? You know, is he really going to be that much more valuable than a lot of the other guys around him? And so even though he would have been a good value there, I thought, okay, I have the number two wide receiver on my board in Demaryius Thomas, and then Marshawn Lynch was the number seven running back on my board. And I know how quickly running backs fly off the board in this league. And I thought, you know what? I would rather have two studs and give up my first two round picks than to just get a value like Percy Harvin. And so, Evan, that's ultimately what changed my mind is – I was willing to give up that value knowing that I would get two studs in those first two rounds.
And then to piggyback off that, do you have any hesitation about Lynch? I know there's a lot of talk out there, some of the pundits saying he got a lot of carries, he came in, you know, a week late to training camp, just other running backs behind him, younger, coming in. Do you think there's any hesitancy in your mind to keep them even with the second round pick?
No, not really at all. I think he'll finish somewhere between 6 and 10 among running backs this year, which is exactly where I had him. He They gave him more money to come back. I mean, he ultimately won his holdout. They gave him more money. I personally believe they are going to absolutely run him into the ground this season and then cut ties with him after the year's over. And so I think he'll get just as many carries as he's gotten in years past. Okay, maybe if his yards per carry goes down slightly. Honestly, I'm not too concerned about that because I know he's going to score touchdowns. And I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, okay, great. I kind of think the same as you. Maybe earlier in the offseason, I would have him close to the fifth pick, and I think he was my seventh running back as well. So, cool. Thanks.
No, not a problem. Good question.
Brian, I got three questions for you, and I'm deciding what to ask first. I'll ask you what you were thinking in the late rounds. Honestly, I'm not that big of a fan of your late round picks.
Sure.
The 14, 15, 16, you took two defenses and a kicker. I mean, okay, on one defense and kicker, I'm kind of curious why you took a second defense. And then also, I don't know, it's just kind of traditional that in those later rounds, you're looking for kind of a lottery pick style person. And I'm not sure that, you know, maybe Sean Green or Jeremy Hill is that person in round 12 and 11.
Yeah, good question. As far as the defense is concerned, that's probably one of the more frustrating parts of my draft. I wish I would have taken one sooner, as I noticed they were starting to go off the board quickly. I know Cincinnati was available at one point, and I passed on them, so I'm kicking myself for that. Ultimately, we went with Kansas City. I do not feel good about that at all. So I wanted to give myself a little bit of insurance and got Houston in the last round, which I think there's a lot of potential there. I think last year was just a lost season for them. Drafting Jadeveon Clowney number one overall, getting Brian Cushing back. I think they could be really good by season's end. I'm just not quite ready to put them in my starting lineup yet. And then to your second question, I disagree with Jeremy Hill. I actually do think he has a lot of upside, being a rookie running back in Cincinnati. I know he's playing alongside Giovanni Bernard, but there was a new report that came out today that said the two of them may be in a 50-50 timeshare as far as carries are concerned. Wow. Bernard's obviously going to get more passes, being the third down back, but they're saying they might split carries that way, and so I feel good about Jeremy Hill there. And then Sean Green, yeah, okay, he doesn't have a lot of future value, but I wasn't really looking for keeper picks here anyway. I feel like the best keeper values are going to come on the waiver wire midseason, not necessarily from the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean Green, I actually think he's going to be the starter over Bishop Sankey. That's my personal opinion. I don't really see what the big deal about Bishop Sankey is. So, you know, he could be, I don't know how long it'll last. Maybe his job will be overtaken by midseason, but he could be a decent bye week fill in early in the season.
So I've heard you say the same thing twice now about two completely different positions. One, you took Cam Newton, and then right after you took him, you didn't feel very good about it, so you took Jay Cutler two picks later.
Mm-hmm.
And then you took Kansas City, and you didn't feel good about it, so you took another defense two picks later. Do you feel like those two picks with Cam Newton and Kansas City actually cost you two additional picks because you didn't feel good about them?
Not necessarily, and I'll be honest, I actually felt good about the Cam Newton pick. He was my number six player on the board. At the time, he didn't have that rib injury. I took Jay Cutler two picks later because he was the number seven quarterback on my board, and a lot of the players after him had already been picked. And I thought, okay, I'll get my number six and number seven quarterbacks and maybe roll with the hot hand.
Yeah, I actually like Cutler better than Newton. I don't think they're that far apart, but that's personal opinion.
Yeah.
If nobody else has a question immediately, I'll ask you how you feel about Gronkowski in the fourth round and his potential for injury. Yeah, your question.
I'm very nervous.
I don't necessarily disagree with what you did. I'm just curious your
thoughts. No, it's okay if you disagree with me. I don't care. But no, Gronkowski, I knew he wasn't going to be there any longer. And I know when Gronkowski is healthy, and you know this from experience, Gabe, because you used to own him. when he's healthy, he's a true difference maker. He is going to potentially win you matchups. And so I was willing to take the risk there, knowing that, you know, knowing that he may not be healthy for a full 16 games. And so that's why I took a backup tight end relatively early in the 10th round in Zach Ertz. I'm kind of, he's still kind of an unproven commodity, but I'm hoping with that Chip Kelly offense that he can really come on strong in the event that Gronkowski does get injured. You guys might remember I did the same thing last year. I took Gronkowski in the 5th round knowing that he was going to miss at least the first 4 games. And I drafted Jordan Cameron late in the draft, and that actually worked out pretty well for me. So maybe if that situation arises, similar results will happen.
Well, Ryan, I will tell you this: Gronkowski was not going to make it to the 5th round because he was not going to make it past me. It is a little bit different situation for me than you. He would have been the 6th player on my team, where he was the 4th player on your team. But, I don't necessarily think he was a bad pick in the 4th round, and he was not going to make it past the 4th round, so.
I'm glad I took him then.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I had to pick, 2 before you, so the 2nd pick of the 4th round, and that's why I took Vincent Jackson. And had I got maybe somebody I was a little bit more comfortable with as my number 1 running back in Monte Ball, you know, I probably would have pulled the trigger on Gronkowski there because of exactly your reasons, right? But I just thought that, you know, if I got him, then there was a lot of question marks on my first 4 picks, and I just wanted somebody, Vincent Jackson, you kind of know what you're getting, you know, you'll get streaky, but at least you kind of know where Gronkowski is a little bit up in the air.
Yeah, just one of those things, risk versus reward.
Mm-hmm. Right, I'll give you, since I grilled you so hard, I'll give you a compliment. I like Toby Gerhardt.
Thank you.
I think he's going to do okay.
Thank you.
I don't think he's going to be... I may be a little less on him than you are, but I do think he's a good pick.
Yeah, here's the thing with Gerhardt. I don't think he's one of the top 20 most talented running backs, but fantasy is not always about talent. A lot of it's about opportunity, and I think he's going to get all the opportunity he can there in Jacksonville.
Certainly.
John, you've been quiet there. Are you...
No.
Getting ready to rake me over the coals or something?
Yeah, mind about Sean Green. I mean, he's owned, I think, on 22% of the teams on Yahoo, so I was going to ask you what you saw in him, but Dave already addressed that.
Gotcha. Okay, then. Well, thanks for the questions, guys. It was fun to be on this side of the microphone for a change. Let's just do a quick wrap it up with some rapid fire. Team by team, I'm going to go through. We'll go in the same order we've been going. Just want to know, in hindsight, knowing everything you know now, what's one thing you wish you would have done differently? Gabe, let's start with you.
Yeah, I shouldn't have drafted D'Angelo Williams at all, no matter what round it was. Specifically not in the 11th round. So that was a mistake.
Safe to say that if you have a waiver claim in week 1, Williams is the guy you'll be giving up?
Most likely.
Sean, what about you?
Maybe a little less drinking during the draft and a little more focus on running backs.
Hey, I do have a quick question, though. Something I've never done is, like, have somebody look over my shoulder and kind of bounce ideas off of. And I know you did there where you were drafting. Was that something you liked? Did it help you at all?
No. He usually had some smart aleck comment for everything that was happening.
So it was just like being with us then?
Exactly. I was expecting, you know, sit in my living room, calm, you know, light some scented candles, and, you know, really focus on this. And instead, it went the exact opposite direction.
Oh, that's funny. Evan, what about you?
No, I wish in my 3rd round pick, I wish I would have grabbed Randall Cobb instead of Rashad Jennings. I've gone back and forth, and I think I would have benefited by having a little bit stronger wide receivers than I do if I would have grabbed Cobb.
Good answer. Yeah, Cobb was taking the very next pick. And then I kind of mentioned mine. I think I would have taken a defense earlier. I don't feel real strongly about that. But, you know, defenses can be so unpredictable the way it is. It may be a moot point by midseason. So, anything else you guys want to add?
To go, Tim Kinter.
bringing a title back to Western Kansas.
So.
Well, guys, I appreciated this. This was fun. Took just a little bit longer than I expected, but overall, I thought we had some good content and good talking to you guys about the draft.
Likewise. Agreed.
And, Sean, you and I are going to do the last podcast of the preseason. Next week, we're going to give some bold predictions. Are you excited?
I cannot wait.
Good deal. I'll be in touch with you, and we'll figure out a time where we're going to do that. So, but it will definitely be next week before the NFL season kicks off, Thursday, September 4th. So I'm completely stoked, and I know you guys are as well. So thanks again for joining me. Be sure to check out my blog for the latest news and updates from Fake Sports Real Talk, and we'll talk to you later.